Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about the show and find out how you can watch live, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the November 14th episode of Pub Talk Live. I did almost forget to unmute myself. Thank you all so much for joining us. Pub Talk Live is a live publishing talk show airing the second and fourth Saturday of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern. I am your host, Sarah Nicholas. I'm a young adult author, board member, and agent liaison for Pitch Wars and library event planner. Just a reminder, you can subscribe to reminders via email with the link in the description so you don't miss a show. You can also follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Pub Talk Live. And if you'd like to support the show, you can find a link to the Patreon near the end of the video description down below as well. So I'm just going to go ahead and bring on today's co-host. Michael Mamet is the author of Planet Side, Space Side, and the forthcoming Colony Side from Harper Voyager. He is a retired Army officer and now writes full-time. He is currently working on both his fourth and fifth novels, which are under contract and will likely publish in early 2022. He lives with his wife in Savannah, Georgia. So please welcome Mike to the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
Thank you for coming. I'm so happy you're here. We have a lot of people here saying hello. Jay is here. Laura, Evelyn, Heather. Hello, Angel. Hey, good to see you, Angel and Jessica. We have a lot of, so my regulars, they named themselves Pubbers last winter. And so when you see that, that's what's going on is kind of the regular viewers say, hey, Pubbers. Hey, Kristen, glad you came back. All right. So the first thing we have for you is the viewer poll, and it's a pretty simple one this week. The question is, do you edit as you draft? So if you haven't already voted on that, I'm going to put the link in the chat and make sure you go vote, and we'll talk about that at the end of the show.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear what you're going to say about that because I have very strong feelings about that.
People have strong feelings about it. Which I'm sure. Someone in my my virtual write-in Thursday is the one who suggested that question. And I was like, oh, that's a good question. People are going to have feelings.
I cheated. I looked at the results as they're going, and it was a little surprising to me. So,
oh, yeah?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to take the news item, first news item, or you want me to take it?
You take it, because I don't know how to say that first word.
Okay. I only know how to say it because of the show and I still get it wrong. So it's fine. Houghton. Yes. Houghton Mifflin Harcourt is looking to sell its trade division. The trade group's president, Ellen Archer, has left the company and their VP of sales will serve as interim president. And this is news actually came out after the last episode. And there was a fifth Saturday in October. And so it's been 3 weeks since this news came out. So it's kind of like a little bit of old news, but I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because they already divested of their educational division. And the difference is, so I looked at some of this stuff, and the difference is this, their educational division was losing, it was hemorrhaging money because of the online book market and all the things. And I mean, 2020 and the new model for education. So that one was hemorrhaging money. This one isn't. So this is not something that's losing money and they're divesting it. I couldn't figure out why. So
I think the article, this is a good time to mention all the news items that we talk about. There's going to be a link in the description after the show today if you want to learn more about any of them. But the article is talking about they wanted to focus on educational technology, I guess. So I don't know. We'll see. You can just call it HMH instead of saying the full name.
Okay, I will. That's good from now on. Next thing is best-selling author Rachel Kane, also known as Roxanne Longstreet Conrad, passed away on November 1st at the age of 58 after a battle with soft tissue sarcoma, which is a kind of cancer.
Yeah. Yeah, this I have a lot of friends who are friends with her. I never met her in person. She was supposed to come to a conference last year that I was going to, a small conference. And then she had to cancel after she was diagnosed, actually. So I never got to meet her, but I know a lot of people who are close to her. So So I'm just gonna move on to the next part because that, yes, thanks, Laura. It is very sad. All right, President Barack Obama will be a guest speaker at the virtual Booker Prize ceremony on Thursday. Also, six actors, including Thandi Newton, will offer stage readings of the short listed titles. We've talked about Booker Prize on the show before. Mike, I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I know what it is. I know the books that are nominated. I have not read any of them, and I probably won't.
That's the thing. Is for me, the Booker Prize is like the award that I feel like I should care more about and don't.
Yeah, like if you want to talk about the Hugos or the Nebulas, I can tell you I've probably read like, you know, 2/3 of those books from the last 10 years. Yeah. But Booker Prize, not so much. So, but I mean, you know, the former president's going and Thandi Newton. So here's your choice, right? You're in a room. Barack Obama's on one side. Thandi Newton's on the other side. You only have time to go say hi to one. Who are you going? Where are you going?
Oh, I didn't realize you were going to be asking hard questions.
Tonight. That's a hard question, right? I mean, Thandi Newton's in Westworld.
Oh, that is a very hard question. I think I'm going to have to go with Barack.
I think you do, right? Yeah. I mean,
I would be sad about it.
I think you have to say that you would, even if you wouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, how many drinks have I had? Yeah. I like Thandi Newton. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. I am too, obviously. That's why I put she was one of the six. And I was like, oh, I need to put that on there. So maybe for the first time ever, I might pay attention to the Booker Prize.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I have to watch the third season of Westworld. Okay, this is an interesting one to me. The company that runs Frankfurt Book Fair is making some big changes. They've said they're modernizing the concept to ensure the continued existence of the fair. One of the representatives said events will be increasingly supplemented by digital and virtual formats, following the success of this year's pivot to digital. They're also looking at restructuring, including layoffs. So if you don't know, Frankfurt is one of the two big industry conventions that happen every year, London and Frankfurt. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it matters a lot to you if you're a published author, because that's where they try to sell you foreign rights, which is, in author speak, free money. And free money is good money. But neither of them, one is in May and Frankfurt is in October. And obviously no one is traveling internationally in 2020. Probably, you know, if they're in October 2021, they may be okay. Yeah. But I think what people are finding is that you get like 80 or 90% of the benefit from doing these conventions, you know, virtually. You know, I've been part of some good cons that have gone virtual. And I think that's here to stay. Like, I think most cons are going to have a virtual component going forward. Not all. I mean, the small ones won't because they can't. But but the big cons, like, you know, for science fiction, the Nebulas and the Hugos, I don't think there's ever going to be a time again where you can't get some part of the programming online.
Yeah. Well, so this is like, I think a lot of people kind of, they hear book fair and they think of like a consumer event. This is definitely not a consumer event. This is an industry event.
Right.
This is like agents and editors selling to editors and distributors and stuff like that. Yeah. So for them, that kind of like networking element is super strong. Right. And so I don't think they'll ever go fully digital for this, but, if they have a choice, I mean.
No, but the digital, so the interesting part about this from an agent perspective, so my agency, I'm with Jabberwocky, right? And they're big in science fiction and fantasy. So they're going to send somebody to all of these and they're going to have a book of all their stuff. I mean, they have a foreign rights agent. But if you're repped by somebody at a smaller agency where they don't have the funds to send somebody to Brooklyn, they probably can make it to Brooklyn. Most of them probably live there. You know, to London or to Berlin, or to, excuse me, to Frankfurt. I think it's a leveler. It's right. I mean, they can be part of this now. Can they get the virtual meetings? I don't know. You know, but I think it narrows the field a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting to see what will happen. Of course, it's that end part though. And like, if you read the article, it's kind of like dancing around it a little bit, but yeah, there are going to be some layoffs involved with this as well. So that's never good to hear about. All right. The American Booksellers Association has formally announced that their 2021 Winter Institute in February will be held virtually. It was originally scheduled to take place in Cincinnati. This is another one that's kind of like, of course, it felt inevitable. but back, you know, in the summer when they were still talking about this, we still had kind of hope that we were going to be able to do big events in 2021. But
not soon.
Yeah.
The ABA, is that the one? Is that the one where everyone goes and stands in line and fights over arcs?
I think, yeah, not the Winter Institute isn't as big on that one, but the because they do two a year, I think. Okay. If I'm remembering correctly. So there's one that's like, yeah, a whole lot of bloggers go and stuff. But ALA is also well known for people snatching up arcs as well. American Library Association Conference.
Okay. Macmillan has officially pushed back reopening its New York City offices to July 6th. The previous planned date for reopening was January 11th. I think that one speaks for itself. I don't think, you know, I think everyone put things off to January hoping it would be better.
Yeah.
It's not. What are you going to do? I think it's interesting how far they pushed it out.
And Macmillan did this last year too, not last year. Oh my gosh. Time is so weird right now. Macmillan did this earlier this year too, where basically they gave people like a 3-month warning basically. And so here they're giving people like a 6-month warning. Whereas I know a lot of employers, some who I will not name, are like, we could tell you to come back to work tomorrow. So I like that they're giving people kind of that heads up.
Yeah. I do wonder how the pandemic changed the publishing industry, if some of it will go distributed, because I think it would be so great if it did, because the entry level jobs do not pay enough to live in New York. I mean, there are publishing people who are living 4 to 1 apartment because, you know, 4 to a 2 bedroom because that's all they can afford. So, you know, publishing is not going to jack up the salaries. That's not going to happen. So letting somebody work from Iowa, you know, where they can get the same rental for, you know, an eighth of the price.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually just talking last night to someone. They're like, do you want to move to New York City and work in publishing? I'm like, I do, in that I think that I would enjoy New York City at least for a while. And also I really enjoy in-person networking and that kind of stuff. And then I don't, because no matter what I'm getting paid, it won't be enough to live in New York City, basically. So, yeah. All right. Is it mine? Am I next?
Yeah, you're up.
Thanks. An European Union watchdog accused Amazon of using the private data it collected on independent sellers to create unfair competition. Surprising no one. They concluded that it uses the data to spot products and offers that perform well and then offer customers Amazon brand versions instead.
Yeah, this is not surprising at all.
Have you read Rob Hart's The Warehouse?
I have not.
Okay. So it's a very Amazon-like company that basically takes over the U.S. economy entirely.
Is it fiction or nonfiction?
But this was like an important part of the story. At least one of the main characters' stories is basically they did this to one of the main characters. So, not only is it important because Amazon is super important to the book industry, but I just thought it was like interesting that it was an exact plot point in The Warehouse.
I had a contract held up. Well, it wasn't held up. We held off on a contract with Audible, which is a division of Amazon, because they were being sued by all the big 5 publishers for something like this. Something different, but buy your books from somewhere other than Amazon if you can afford to. That's all I'll say about that.
Yep. All right. We have some good news. I wanted to make sure to end on good news. So we have two actually pieces of good news.
Yeah. You want to do the next one? Because I'll do the last one.
Sure. Yeah.
I wrote that in there at the last minute.
Yeah. Simon & Schuster's third quarter sales were up 29% compared to last year's. And also HarperCollins reported sales 13% higher than the same last year. For Harper, it's important to note digital sales were up 20% and made up 23% of their consumer revenues.
I actually saw this one when it came out. And it was really, I mean, obviously it's really interesting that, and I wonder, I'm really now interested to see what happens in the fourth quarter, if it was a one quarter thing. But, you know, there were no giant books that, so I looked for a giant book in third quarter, because that happens, right? Some monster book comes out.
You know, the Twilight book lifted.
Michelle Obama's book comes out, you know, and a whole bunch of people buy it, and it does, it changes an entire quarter. But this doesn't look to be that. So it really is good news.
Yeah. Well, they were saying, who was it? Now I can't remember if it was Harper or Simon & Schuster. It was Bob Woodward's book came out 2 years ago this quarter. And those numbers are even higher than the numbers this year are even higher than the numbers 2 years ago, which is interesting.
Okay. And then the last thing is the speculative literature. Speculative Literature Foundation is now accepting applications for the Working Class Writers Grant. Applications will be open through 31 December 2020. It's a $1,000 Working Class Writers Grant. It's awarded annually to assist working class, blue collar, poor, and homeless writers who've been historically underrepresented in speculative fiction due to financial barriers. So grant funds can be used as each writer determines. So it's basically, it's a living stipend. I mean, you can use it for your rent. If you want to know more about that, I don't have a link, but you can see the Science Fiction Writers of America homepage, and they have that, and they run a lot of grants every year. Mm-hmm. They give away a lot of money. So,
I remember the story. So, I don't know if you know this, but like Angie Thomas got a We Need Diverse Books grant from the early years of WNDB to buy a computer because their computer stopped working. And so, like, it's interesting to think how much of an impact that has had, you know?
Yeah, that paid off for America, for the world.
Good investment.
Yeah, it was a good investment. And those are the kinds of things that they do, you know, for science fiction and fantasy writers. You can... There are a lot of grants out there if you go looking.
All right. Now it is time to bring on our special guest. So let me just pull up his bio here. Dan what's wrong with my mouth? Is the author of the Gateways to Alicia trilogy, editor of Putting the Science in Science Fiction, and a research scientist in the field of human genetics and genomics. Genomics?
I think so.
Okay. He is also the co-writer of the cereal box original, The Triangle, along with Mindy McGinnis and Sylvia Spruck Wrigley. Along with Mike, he co-hosts SFF Pit, a Twitter pitch event for science fiction and fantasy books. So please welcome Dan to the show. Hello.
Well, I'm here in spite of my butchered introduction.
Sorry.
So also in the introduction, it skips the most important thing about Dan in his writing career, that he was my Pitch Wars mentor in 2015.
Oh, so true. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. So he's the reason why I am successful as a writer today.
And I appreciate that. And I'm just riding your coattails to the top, buddy.
All right. I'm so glad you both could come on today. I was thinking of people to invite. I'm like, Mike and Dan together would be so much fun. So I'm glad we're here.
Good. Yeah. No, I try and get Mike to do stuff like this all the time, and he is never interested. So kudos on getting him to participate.
Oh, cool. Because he's done a couple of things for me. So
you clearly hold more sway. So congratulations.
Our things are way cooler. That's all.
Yeah, it's true.
It's probably possible. All right. So the first question we have from you is from Patreon supporter Lodestar. So the Patreon supporters at certain levels can submit questions ahead of time for our guests. And so this is one of his questions. As a man of science, what is a common idea in the science fiction fantasy genre that irks you?
Oh, yeah, I edited a whole book about this. I was thinking about this a little bit, and you know, I have my personal things because I'm a geneticist, and so I'm bothered by people who get like very basic concepts of genetics and inheritance wrong. But I think I've covered that like almost too much. So I was thinking that another thing that bothers me, this is mostly in like screen media, is that scientists are really portrayed as sort of the same person over and over again. It's like the kind of geeky guy or girl with glasses who's very smart and wearing a lab coat and doing that. And I guess that is a trope. It's probably true of many professions that get portrayed this way, but that's a trope that totally does not resemble reality. First of all, everyone on TV is way better looking than everyone in real life. I mean, that's just generally true. But you know, I think there are a lot of scientists who are very interesting people outside of their job. They're not really defined by their job. And I mean, I've worked with people who are like professional wrestlers. My boss is a fifth degree black belt. And like, there's a lot of people who are scientists and that's something they're passionate about and they care about, but they're interesting people outside of that life too. So that's something that bothers me. It's probably not exactly what the question asker was going for. I don't even have time to cover all the things in genetics. Just like, please, if you're going to talk about inheritance or genetics, get a 101 course or something under your belt before you write too much into that. That's all I ask.
And you have
get a geneticist to be one of your beta readers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's my plan. Works for me. There are some genetics in my original book.
Yeah, you are. I give you a lot of creative license on that. So I will do that for you.
Nobody's buying my books for the genetics.
I mean, so true.
Or the science of any kind. I just hand wave it away. Okay, so this is, it's funny. So when Sarah wanted us to talk about Cereal Box, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the triangle in the series that you did with Cereal Box. And at the time, they did not know the history that you and I have together on that project.
Yeah, before you go into that, let me give like background how I came to be with Cereal Box. So Cereal Box, they're a digital publisher. They're relatively new. And a few years ago, I had actually met a couple people who work with them and some of their early writers. And I had heard about it and I was like, oh, it's serial, like serialized fiction. That's kind of cool. And I didn't know too much about it, but I had met I met Max Gladstone or somebody and was telling me about it. And they issued a call a few years back for proposals. Like they were like, come and pitch us your serial you want to do for Cereal Box. And they had issued a story prompt, which I'm probably bad at pitching totally unique ideas, but give me a story prompt and I'll definitely, you know, come up with something. So I pitched this idea so their prompt was team of people or a group of people is receiving messages of some kind, preferably audio, related to a mystery that they're trying to solve. And so I heard that and I immediately started thinking about the Bermuda Triangle because I'm big into the Bermuda Triangle and the Loch Ness Monster and other sort of paranormal things. And so I put this pitch together with my agent. My agent was the person who like brought me this opportunity and said, so we put this pitch together about a group of people brought in because the Bermuda Triangle awakens again and starts claiming ships and aircraft like it infamously did in the middle of the 20th century. So we put this pitch together and then seemed like Cereal Box liked it and we got to kind of go to the next step. And then they said, okay, you know, we're going to do this thing. We're going to make the triangle. And now you have to recruit a writing team because one of the things about Cereal Box is they are co-written by a small team of writers. They've modeled this on television writing. So in television writing, although there is often one person that gets the writing credit, it's usually a room of writers that writes for like a TV show or something like that. And then one or two of them will take the lead on a particular episode, but there's a group that works together, and it's adds some creativity to the sort of story and narrative development process and gets multiple points of view. So it's kind of a cool thing. But they said, yeah, okay, we're going to do this. Now you got to go find some co-writers. And so the first person I thought of was Mike, because he and I are critique partners. I was thinking there's going to be definitely like a military sci-fi angle to this thing. So I approached Mike about it, and then, I don't know, Mike can tell you the rest.
Yeah, so I said I would do it, and then I backed out. That's a long story. Yeah. That's a long story short. And the way that I did, and it was, the thing was, is it was running, I remember, it was running right up on Christmas. And I was working my day job then, and I had a book due, and it was, you know, part of the thing with about the writer's room is they want you all to go to New York.
Yeah.
You all got to go. You can't just sit at your desk and write this. You go and you do a series Bible, and you do all, you get together, and it is a writer's room for, you know, and I just did not have time. And I was so stressed about it. So then I called my agent and said, hey, how bad is it going to be if I bail on this thing after we already told them we're going to do it? Right. And it was kind of a hypothetical. And she's like, it's December 17th. If we're going to do this, we need to do this right now. Mm-hmm. And so we did it. She did it, like, right that. And before I could even get in touch with Dan and tell him I was doing it, it had gone through the agent to the publisher, back to Dan, and he found out that way. So that wasn't great.
You couldn't, like, text him?
You know, it happened. So I did not know she was, like, calling the publisher that minute, you know. But before we move on from Cereal Box, so tell us a little, for people who don't, if you've never consumed or even heard of Cereal Box, tell us a little bit about what that product is like.
So yeah,
what,
no, I mean, buy the triangle, you should talk about it more.
Yeah.
Because it's a cool thing. So they want to be basically the HBO of books. That's what they want to be. They want to work with talented groups of writers to produce these serials. They're produced in like an ebook type of thing through an app and in audio, and it's synchronized. And so you can be reading the ebook and then flip over to the audio. I personally really, really like the audio, especially because they have enhanced audio. So it's a neat thing. Like these serials, some of the ones, especially some of their early ones, had several seasons going with teams of writers around them. And it's, I mean, they do a lot of different genres. It's not just science fiction and fantasy. They have thrillers. They have mysteries. They have, you know, like true crime and even things that are sort of like narrative, historical, true fiction or true nonfiction. So it's a really neat concept. And they bring in these writers to produce these things. So I got to write with Mindy and Sylvia. And it was a really cool experience because you get that high intensity experience of working with a team of writers with like very rapid deadlines. Like we wrote each episode. It was like a 2 or 3 week process where, you know, like write the episode and then we would swap out. We were each writing one at once and there were 10,000 words. And then we would like swap them and then provide quick critique for each other. And they were in tandem episodes. So it would be like episodes 4, 5, 6. And I might be writing 4 and I'm like, okay, well, I have them over here in this cave and then you have them starting out on this beach. So like, what are we going to do? And there was like a lot of this rapid coordination, but it was also really cool to have multiple people helping solve like narrative problems and develop the characters and tell interesting stories. And they're both really good writers and we worked really well together as a team. So I think it was a really cool project. Ours was the triangle, but there are many, many serials that Cereal Box has been putting out, and I encourage people to check it out. There's a lot of good fiction there.
And they're a subscription service, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, they have all these serials that are available. The first episode is always free, so you can just go and say, oh, that one's interesting, and you can read or listen to it, and then decide if you want to subscribe to that. And like, you know, you can pick up a whole season. I want to say it's like $12 or something like that for 10 episodes or something. But then some of them will have multiple seasons and you can subscribe sort of over longer term, or you can just go episode by episode. But it's a black hole of great fiction. So you gotta like pace yourself because you're like, oh,
yeah, there are
I'm gonna get this season and this season.
Science fiction and fantasy, there are a lot of really top notch authors working on this.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I've had a couple of people on the show who write for Serial Box, E.C. Myers and Alex Segura. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones I know of anyway. And
yeah,
I mean
they did
Diana Foe there now.
I don't know. I actually don't keep tabs on everyone.
Okay. Oh, I should know the answer to that.
I think didn't she go to Serial? I could be wrong, but
she went to something like it if it wasn't mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
I remember because she was supposed to edit the anthology for the short story I'm supposed to have written by tomorrow and I haven't written yet. But she pulled out of that anthology because she got a job.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, I think she is now the acquiring, she's the person that's acquiring content for it, if I'm not mistaken. So they hired some people from like big name publishing who were in like the sci-fi fantasy field. And so I think that has, yeah,
she came out of tour.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they got somebody else out of tour, I think, too. And so they've they've been hiring some good people. They've been managed to recruit a lot of authors to come and write series for them. I don't really know what their long-term plans are. It seems like they have been really getting invested in existing properties like Black Panther serials and some of these other like big commercial properties they've managed to get. And sometimes they can even get like actors or actresses from the media franchise to come and narrate the audiobooks, which I think is so cool. So it's a cool little effort they have going.
Yeah. Eugene's on the Orphan Black serial. So.
Oh, yeah. The Orphan Black one. That one.
If they get John Wick, I'm in.
They asked me about doing if I wanted to try and, like, you know, pitch myself for it to be one of the Orphan Black writers. But I had to admit to them that at the time I had not seen Orphan Black. So I was probably not the right person to do that. But I'm excited that they're doing that. It's going to be one of their cool serials, I think.
Yeah. All right. Great. So now we're going to talk about SFF Pit. And I hear we're going to have an exclusive announcement. So, well, Lodestar had asked on Patreon again, kind of how you got started. How did SFF Pit get started? So can you talk a little bit about it, what it is, and how it got started, and also when we can expect the next one?
Sure. So SFF Pit started several years ago, kind of after Pit Mad did so well. One thing, I'm friends with a lot of people that run Pitch Wars and Pit Mad, and so obviously I was monitoring these things closely. And one thing I noticed is that sci-fi and fantasy often get just totally drowned in the big, broad pitching contests. And generally, these pitching contests in general, it's on Twitter, it's on a hashtag on a certain day, somebody with a completed manuscript who's looking for representation or publication will pitch that work in the space of a single tweet. And this started in the days when tweets were limited to 144 characters. So like, had to pitch your book in that very short space, allowing for the hashtag and possibly a couple other hashtag for like age category and genre. And so the idea being that there would be agents kind of perusing the feed, and if they were interested, they would like your tweet where you pitch your book. And that was an invitation to query them with the project. And so these things became very popular several years ago. And you probably often see them. There are other themed pitching contests that have come up, like notably DV Pit for diverse books and diverse authors. But that, I think, because sci-fi and fantasy, I felt like was always just getting like drowned in this, I thought it'd be really cool to do one of these just for sci-fi and fantasy. And so I decided to host one. I invited a bunch of agents to come and advertise it to authors too. And a bunch of people showed up, and it's kind of, that was how it got started. So it's been running for a long time. I think we've had 14 or 15 of them now. And so that's the history of it. And there have been success stories out of that where people, you know, I hear about it on some occasion.
somebody, you know, I landed this one the other day. Somebody signed a four-book deal. With Aethon. Small presses are big in sci-fi and fantasy too. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them show up. A lot of good small presses show up and actually buy books out of Pitchworks. But I just saw that one the other day. Somebody signed a 4-book deal with Aethon.
Right. So we have this thing twice a year, and the exclusive thing that Sarah promised is we picked a date for the next one. It's going to be February 3rd, 2021. So mark your calendars. So it will be a week before the Pitch Wars showcase. So obviously we'll be giving that a nod as we're watching everyone pitch their great work during the day. I'm pretty sure if you're an actual Pitch Wars mentee, I meant Pitch Wars showcase. If you're a Pitch Wars mentee, you're not allowed to participate in this, by the way. That's too bad for you. But you got into Pitch Wars, so you should be pretty happy about that. But that's when we're going to have the next one. And so even if you're not pitching a work, I hope you'll come out and support your fellow authors and see what it's like.
Cool.
Okay. I want to change gears to another project. You know, you work on a whole bunch of different things. So you're an editor. So you edited the very successful book, Putting the Science in Sci-Fi.
Yeah, it's this right here in my banner.
It's on the right. Yeah.
Yeah. There.
Putting the Science in Sci-Fi. And for anyone, if you haven't read it, it's a fantastic resource for writers if you want to just know a little bit about it, something. Like if you want to know enough just to fake it through a book, these are the perfect articles. Because what he does is he brings in experts in fields, like, you know, for instance, for genetics. But not just that, you know, it could be archery or medieval armor. Or, you know, that's fantasy, not science fiction. You know,
astrophysics, space travel,
you know, advanced artificial intelligence. People will tell you, like, you can hear from a PhD in these things. And they're all, you know, they're all 5-minute article reads. And he keeps them on his website too. So there it's a really, really great resource for a science fiction writer. If you want someone smart to tell you enough to write a book about it, right? Where it's not your main plot item. You know, and maybe, but you want to get it right. You know, it might be one throwaway line that you're going to put in your book, but somebody can help you make it look smarter. You know, if you don't have access to those people. So that came out 2 years ago.
Yeah. October 2018. And, the book grew out of my blog series. I've had this blog series running for a long time. It was sort of motivated by one of our early questions here is like, what drives you crazy about your area of expertise in media that you see. And so I started hosting these articles from people who are real world experts in things like astrophysics and biology and engineering and such. And so we developed the science and sci-fi portion of that series into a book with Writer's Digest Books. And so came out a couple years ago. It's been, I think, a pretty successful book. And like Mike said, it's a great resource that it's nice to have that you can refer to. And it's like, I do this all the time. I'm like, okay, I have a, you know, I'm running this book where I need to know a lot about gravity. There's this whole chapter on gravity and what you need to know. It's just enough to be dangerous and sound confident and to avoid the grievous like pitfalls that a lay person is likely to make. That's what the book is for. It's like, these are the common mistakes I see, and this is something you can work into your story that'll make it seem really realistic, like you know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so, this book came out a couple years ago, and it's public news now, and so I'm pleased to say that we also are developing Putting the Fact in Fantasy for the fantasy-oriented articles, which will be like historical topics and warcraft and warfare and a lot of topics that are sort of relevant to fantasy authors. That also is going to be with Writer's Digest Books, but now it's owned by Penguin Random House, so a little bit different experience for us. So yes, that is one of my many little projects that I've liked to work on is this blog series that eventually became a book.
The thing I was looking for my copy. I was going to hold it up, but it's on my shelf somewhere. I just couldn't find it because I'm not that neat. Probably the coolest thing about Fact and Fantasy is that I'm writing in it. So, and as an editor, I wish you a lot of luck with that because I have a reputation for not turning stuff in. So,
yeah, I'm going to totally have to give you a fake deadline of some kind that I know will be like way earlier than the real deadline because I did see the contract for that last week. So I like things are getting real, and I will have to actually make people produce things who are going to be part of it. But we have we got a good team of people who have contributed articles and or people who haven't contributed to the blog series but have expertise that I think would be really useful for the book. Each book has like some percent of chapters that are not on the website to motivate you to buy the book. it's also nicely edited by a professional editor other than me. Like they have a they have actual developmental editors and copy editors who work on this. So, so yes, and Mike, he's our go-to person for what it's like to be a grunt of some stripe in the military and how that experience goes and how to write it accurately, which is something you probably experienced if you read his books. So he's written a few of those for my blog series, and I'm glad to get him into the physical book finally.
Yeah, so a pitch also, I would say, if you are an expert at something, you read a lot of, if you read fantasy and science fiction and you're an expert at something, go to Dan's website and send him a note on his website and pitch yourself. Pitch yourself to write an article for what you know about that you wish that people got right in books. You know, if you're a beekeeper, it doesn't, you know, and you just get mad because fantasy bees are wrong. Go out there and talk about fantasy bees.
Yeah, I mean, we actually do have an article on beekeeping, but I'm always open to have other people share their expertise. We don't just have a, oh, no, one expert's already covered that. But it's just funny that you came up with that example.
I mean,
there's 200 plus articles. Whatever you're going to come up with, somebody already tackled, but it's true, like,
There were two schools of beekeeping, and they were like diametrically opposed. And now we're going to start like the bee wars. Like, no, that's not how you do it at all.
That's not where you put the queen.
Beekeeping BS.
Oh, yeah. Oh gosh.
No, it's true. I mean, I would love to meet new people who have expertise in something. I would like to share that with the writing community. I'm always looking for new expert contributors. So please do reach out to me. Zookeeper, awesome. Yes, Laura, I will take a zookeeper.
How did you see the question?
It's in the comments tab.
Oh, I'm on the wrong tab. Holy crap, look at all those things.
I'm a
great host. I will never be back. Hey, it's nice to meet you. I'll never be back.
I would like to be the co-host next time.
Oh, okay.
Zookeeper would be cool.
Yes, psychology. I don't think we've covered a lot of psychology, so I would like to have an expert come talk about that.
Marching band.
Sure, what the heck.
Yeah.
Everybody's an expert in something, right?
Yeah. All right, so switching gears, well, not actually, a little bit, but you're both a scientist and an author.
That's right.
And most people don't know this, but I'm also an engineer, so I'm an engineer and a writer. Did you always want to do both, or were you kind of interested, you know, in one and then later became interested in the other? How did that happen?
What kind of engineer are you?
My degree's in mechanical engineering.
Oh, really?
I was a construction engineer for a while.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you have expertise in like things that move, that sort of automobiles, modes of transport, that sort of thing.
I worked for Anheuser-Busch, so I was I built packaging lines basically.
Okay. Well, I grew up in St. Louis, so we know
Anheuser-Busch. Oh, wow.
I actually grew up in Merrimack, New Hampshire, and they have one of the seven Budweiser plants in the United States. That's a piece of information that nobody else has. There you go. That's another exclusive. Just for y'all.
Yeah.
Okay, well, definitely we will have to get you on the blog series sometime, Sarah. So now I will answer your question. So that's a good question. I was a scientist first, and it's kind of funny. I was working in a lab. I was going to grad school, actually, and I had like some credits to fill, and I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to try one of these fiction writing classes. And I thought at the time, like, I had authored scientific papers. I felt like my writing skills were pretty sound. And I went into this class thinking like, I had read so much, like pretty much every writer, I've read a ton of books. And I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. And I'm just going to like, just pivot my skill set to this thing. And then I went into this class and I was like the worst person in the class. It's like a terrible feeling. Like, oh my God, how can I be so bad at this thing? Like, I'm supposed to be smart, right? I mean, and so it was an awakening for me that it's a very different skill set, a very different type of writing. There are some things that translate, like you do have to be able to write competent sentences and use grammar and punctuation, but that's about it. So the science thing, it's always been kind of a passion for me. And as a fun fact, science tends to provide a more stable, good paying job. So I do highly recommend it. But the writing thing
healthcare is great.
The writing thing is a hobby. And honestly, I think that, you know, my writing career brings unique challenges. And one of the reasons I wanted to do it was that I learned just how hard it is to break in. And like, that's something that motivates me. It's like, oh, it's like, most people don't even write a book. Well, I'm going to do NaNoWriMo and I'll write a book. And most people can't land an agent. Well, I'm just going to keep emailing agents until I land an agent. Yeah, so that's kind of once I, and I, you know, that time, you don't see the time period between when I took that class and when I had a, you know, book come out. That was 8 years in between. So it's not like it happened like that for me. I mean, there's a long building period for me, but I think it's a, you know, it's a different kind of challenges. It's I like doing both things. I always make it clear to my boss that my science job is my number one main important job, and I would like to keep that no matter what. So, because like Mike said, healthcare is good. So, but I enjoy the writing, and I enjoy especially the people that I get to meet, like you two, who are passionate about this, and we would otherwise have no occasion to meet and get to know each other. So that's one of my favorite things about this.
Awesome. Yeah. So a lot of people talk about like right brain versus left brain. I know I faced a lot, like, because I was really interested in writing when I was younger, but I was also very good at math and I was pushed pretty hard in that direction. And you hear a lot of like, oh, engineers can't write or writers can't do math. What are your feelings on kind of that?
I think it more goes the other way, which is to say that not anybody can be a really good writer, and it's really hard to predict who will be. Like some of the people who I think are the most talented and capable writers who I would aspire to emulate, they're like, you know, their job is like part-time volunteer firefighter or something like that. Not to diminish that as a job, but it's not like what you would think of as a haughty intellectual.
That's a position. Very specific example.
It's just like,
I know exactly who you're talking about.
I know. I'm sure you do. And so I'm pretty sure he doesn't have to do that anymore.
He's probably not watching either. So
No. We're talking about Scott Lynch.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's like you, I probably scoff at that notion when somebody tells me I can't do this or I shouldn't do that, or somebody who does this shouldn't be able to do that. I don't think people are wired quite that way. I will say I don't know many people in my particular field who are sort of established writers, at least in my field of genetics and genomics. I know a ton of writers and aspiring writers who work in the sciences. There is definitely, there's a certain draw to that that I think is greater than chance. So yeah, I know several engineers. Now I know that you're an engineer too. So I'm gonna be trying to get you on the blog.
Readers, but the thing is, even when they're not writers, and science nerds are huge readers. You know, I mean, I have a lot of fans that come that have those kinds of backgrounds, a lot of readers, you know, and I think that it's natural that if you're a reader, some percentage of those people are going to gravitate toward, you know, and something, Sarah, that you said that kind of stuck with me there for a second when you said you were kind of pushed toward the math and science. If you're a parent, don't leave out. Go ahead, push your kid that way, but don't leave out the reading part. And I'm going to tell you, because I did, and my son majored in math, and he doesn't read books. And it is one of my greatest failings as a parent. That I have a son who doesn't read books. Hasn't read my books. Hasn't read any books, as far as I know, since he left high school. I mean, you know, he's a smart kid. He was in AP English and everything in high school, but he doesn't read for fun, ever. So don't push your kids so hard toward math and science, even though you really want them to have a good job.
Well, it's funny because I don't even work as an engineer anymore. I'm an event planner. That's my day job. But it is so very similar to managing a construction project that it's weird.
Oh, yeah. I imagine it is.
Yeah, but you can, I mean, and I don't mean this to come, if this comes off bad, don't take it that way. I can see your engineer brain in everything you do.
Yeah.
Because everything true. You do is so engineered. I mean, it's just so organized.
It's very organized. So perfect.
That's why I always say yes when you ask me to do something. Because I know it's going to be great. I mean, I just know that I'm going to have a time. You'd be here at this time and you do this and that's what you do. And it needs to be this long. And I'm like, that's what I need. That's just perfect.
She sends like two reminders, including like a, hey, just remember, like in 1 hour, we're talking. So be there. I mean, it's true. I do see that. There are a lot of people who can do both science and writing. And yes, Emma, I see you in the sidebar and we're going to have to talk about that marine biology and science thing.
All right.
Yeah. So the thing that you really probably wanted to come on and talk about, we saved that for down the list here. So you got a new book coming out, right? January 5th, if I'm not mistaken, and you I am right. not. Dan's got a new book coming out from a new publisher. Well, they're not a new publisher, but they're new to him. From Bain Books, he has a book called Domesticating Dragons. So tell us a little bit about that. Where'd it come from? What's it about?
Yeah, well, it's basically Build-A-Bear Workshop meets Jurassic Park is how I describe the book. And that's the best pitch I've come up with for a book ever. And I'm just going to
stick to that. Pitch.
And people love that. I mean, and it kind of describes what happens. I mean, the longer story is genetic engineer goes to work for a company that makes custom dragons for like sale for pets and for other purposes. And so it's kind of a cool career move for him, but he also has reasons that he wants to get into this company because they have some unique resources that he hopes to bend to his own secret purposes, which are noble purposes, but secret purposes. So it's my next book. It's my first adult science fiction novel. And it's coming out from Bain Books, which is just a great publisher to be bringing this out. And I've gotten to work with them over the past several months. It's been a really cool experience. Seeing my name on like the Bain website was very neat for me because I've been a member of their online community since like 2007 or something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm on Bain Books. They're talking about it. It's very
I've
exciting.
I've been reading Bain Books. I mean, the books that got me, that made me want to be a writer were by Bain. They published by Bain, the Elizabeth Moon's books. So she did those, that fantasy series, Adida Paxinarian, which is military fantasy. And it was the first time I ever read a military fantasy. And I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever read. I really want to write this. And if you ever get a chance to read my first book that I wrote, which you will never see, it's almost fanfic it's like a stripped down fanfic for those books, which are Bain books.
Hey, wait. I think I saw that.
Did Dan read that one?
Is that the one you put into Pitch Wars?
Oh, yeah. You saw that.
I did see that.
Yeah. You know why no one else will ever see it.
I'm going to start putting it up on the internet.
Yeah, I think you probably have the first chapter. That's about it.
Oh, my gosh. But that's true. It's a great house. And my book, it's adult science fiction. I've been working on this book for several years. It started out as a novella and it kind of grew into this novel.
I think I read it two, maybe almost 3 years ago.
Yeah. And like I've had more critique partners and beta readers for this book than any of my other projects. And everyone like has made a really good contribution. My poor agent has read it like at least 3 or 4 times. And so when we sent it out and it went on submission, I said, we should send this to Bain Books. And that was who ended up buying it. So we were super excited.
Yes. Yeah, the thing that I loved about it is it's so possible. I mean, it may not be.
Oh, yeah.
But it feels like it is. It feels like this is something like 20 years from now you're going to be able to do. Like a designer pet. Now, granted, it won't be a dragon that's going to kill people and stuff like that. But
Could it be a pink unicorn?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's my joke, running joke with Dan is you're a geneticist. You say you're a geneticist and you're, you know, a fantasy author, but you haven't made a unicorn yet. Yeah. What are you even doing? you know, because that's what I feel like you should be sneaking into the lab at night and creating a unicorn.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's on my list. I just have so much to do, Mike. You know, this is like make Mike his unicorn busy. Or do, you know, do something else for somebody else. But it's true. I mean, and I will say quite honestly that this book has more of my real world job and my experiences working in science and sort of a cutting edge field. This has more of that than anything else I've written. And that's something I'm really proud of and excited about that I got to share. And so there are, you know, I always have a Tuckerization in a series. And like in my first fantasy series, one of my coworkers, whose name is Vince, his last name is the basis for a character who in the book dies pretty much like instantly. And so he, you know, never lets me live that down. And so, you know, I have somebody else who has a Tuckerization in this book too. So I've had a lot of fun putting this book together, and I have loved dragons for as long as I can remember. So many people do, and you know, almost everything I write has some form of a dragon. But this one is like I'm going whole hog, like every kind of cool dragon you could make. Here's how I would make it, and there's real genetic stuff in there too. So. It was a really neat project for me, and I'm excited to have it coming out in January.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, a lot of people in the comments are excited about it too. So we just have one last question for you. It's a question I ask every guest, and it is, what is the most important book that you've read and why?
Yes. Well, that is a good question. I think that, I would say there's two. The first is Harry Potter, and it's not because it's Harry Potter. It's because I just finished reading Harry Potter, the entire series, to my kids. We went through all like 7 books, and we just finished like a month ago. And I mean, and I was doing this before we started reading it when they were like just getting past like picture books, and they were really into it, and we would read every night at bedtime. And so that is probably the most important book I've read for that reason, that they're all like voracious book readers. At least right now, I'm totally beating Mike in the dad department.
Absolutely.
Because they're really into it. And a love of reading just for fun is so important for kids, but it's also, there's like this magic to it where you like, you can't force a kid to read and to love reading. You just have to like bring them in and be like, here's something like you might like and listen to it and let's read this thing together. And then hopefully they fall in love. And I knew I'd succeeded when like we were driving up on a weekend trip like a couple weeks ago. And I look in the back seat, my sons had like a stack of books like this big for a 1.5 hour car ride. I was like, okay, we really needed all these books for, I mean, it's just like this huge stack of tomes that then later fell on one of them when we took a turn. I was like, well, I mean, bad for the planning of the car trip, but good for inspiring the books.
Yeah. How old are they now?
I have 2 sons who are in 4th grade, and my daughter is in 6th grade in middle school. And so they're all reading like above their level, and I'm happy that they're into it right now, and they still like to or permit me to read to them, and so that was the true answer. I mean, I think when I was their age, if you asked me that same question, what was the most important book, I would immediately say Lord of the Rings, because when I was in 4th grade, I started reading Lord of the Rings, and I was so into it, and that's the book that made me want to become a writer, and it really brought me into like fantasy and sci-fi just so hard at that young impressionable age. So that was like a formative book for me too at that age. So we're not there yet. I'm actually reading The Hobbit now. We're going to do The Hobbit and then Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay. Wow. Ebony always laughs at the faces people make when I ask that question. It's a thing. One day I'm going to do like a cut of all of them.
I will now respond to comments. Yes, Domesticating Dragons is on Edelweiss, so thank you for whoever figured that out. And if you get an advanced reviewer copy, I hope you will read it and leave me a review somewhere. That would be much appreciated. Or just email me and I'll set you up. Anybody listening to this deserves to get a free copy of that. So, will there be any kind of promo tour for the release of Domesticating Dragons? Well, it's funny you should ask. I am doing a live event with Mike. Is that January 7th that we're doing that, Mike?
I don't have my thing.
We'll do it. I don't have my plan. Sarah will tell us when it is, and we will be there.
That's true.
And
follow Sarah.
She will run it. It'll be so smooth and organized. You'll be like, I can't believe Dan didn't know when it was. But there will be that, and I'm doing some other promotional stuff around that time. I'm going to have some guest posts up there in some places. And I have a very special thing that I've been planning promotion wise that
he's
I've
gonna release
I've
been a dragon
planning
into the wild.
I will. The winner of this thing, let's just say it's a sort of contest and I've been planning it for a long time. The winner is going to get a dragon. That's all I'll say. Okay. So you're going to want to participate in that. I'm going to announce it probably in about a month, but it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be in December.
Ebony, I am working with them on that event, so that was not a joke. I am helping them with that. So all right. So Dan, thank you so much for coming on today. Mike and I just have a couple things left, but thank you for coming on the show and talking with us. And
yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed our banter here. I enjoyed all the awesome comments from your pub crowd inside the pubbers. So
yeah,
I hope we can come back and do this again sometime.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah. All right. And also they'll be back in January. So we'll do that too.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. Good night, Dan. All right. Now it's just you and me, Mike.
All right.
So usually I do an audiobook of the week, but since I'm a judge for the audiobook awards, I can't talk about the books I'm listening to right now. But Mike actually has an audiobook of the week for us.
Yeah, I love this because I'm such a huge audiobook nerd. Like, I have favorite readers, not just favorite authors, but favorite readers. So this one I wanted to talk about, even though it's not an audiobook, you cannot buy this right now. And so I looked into why, because I read the first book in this series. The first book of this series is called, The Rage of Dragons. And I loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it on audio. Everyone loves it. It's like 4.4 on Goodreads, which is unheard of for a debut. It's with Orbit, Evan Winter is, I think you're going to hear from this guy a lot. He's a black fantasy writer from Canada, and he writes this amazing fantasy, which you probably call grimdark. I don't want to call it that because I hate that term because nobody knows what it means. But if you're a fan of Joe Abercrombie and what he writes, Evan Winter is a great read. And I listened to the first one on audio and I went, the Fires of Vengeance came out on Tuesday, this past Tuesday. And I went to get the audio book and it wasn't there. So I wondered why, and I happened to know the editor. So I reached out to the editor who is, Britt Vita is the editor, at Orbit who works with Evan. And what she told me was that there's a little delay because they wanted to use the same narrator, which is Prentice Oniemi, same narrator who was awesome for this book. He's got like this deep voice, like it's perfect. He was so good. But his schedule didn't line up with the book release. So they decided instead of releasing with a different narrator to hold on the audiobook a little while longer until they could get it narrated by the same person.
Okay.
But I'm a huge fan of this, and it's a duology, which I love because this book ends it, you know, you got one book and then the next book and it's a completed series. And I really look forward to seeing what Evan does next.
Awesome. Yeah. So we all have time to check out the first book before the second book comes out on audio then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right. And the last thing we have today is the viewer poll. So let's pull that up. And the question was, excuse me, do you edit as you draft? And we have, let's see, 54% say yes, they make small changes. 32% say they make yes, and sometimes they make big changes. And 14% said not at all. Do you edit as you draft, Mike?
So I'm interested. I have a very interesting style with this. I will never make small changes while I draft. I will either go not at all or something big.
Oh, that's funny.
Because I'm not going to waste my time going back and fixing small stuff, because I'm going to write this book 8 times anyway. I mean, by the time I get through 2 drafts for myself, 1 draft for my first round of beta readers, another draft for my next beta readers, my agent, my editor, my developmental editor, my copy editor, my page passes, that's 8. I'm going to go through this thing 8 times. It's a waste of time for me to go back and make small changes. So I'll write everything until the book is ruined. So the minute I realize that, hey, this will not work. And the point that usually happens is if I get to what's supposed to be the midpoint and it's not in the right place. Mm-hmm. So I write to a mid. I'm very much a structural writer.
Mm-hmm.
I pants all my scenes, but I structure, you know, to a midpoint, to a second act climax and stuff like that. So if I get to the point where the first act, I know it's so bad that I'm going to have to change a lot of things, it becomes not worth it to write the end of the book, because so much is going to change at the beginning that I'm going to end up changing the end anyway. So then I'll go back and I'll just start over. Usually that would only happen once. In my most recent book, in my fourth book, which I'm working on the fifth draft starting next week. I didn't have to do that at all. I never had to go back. It just kind of came together. But my second book, I basically had to go back and start at the beginning.
What about you? It kind of depends on deadlines, right?
Yeah.
So if I have, like, so for Keeping Your Secret, I sold on spec and I had to finish the book in 5 weeks. I had to write the whole book in 5 weeks. And so I knew where the book was going, though. So I edited small stuff as I went along, because my first draft is pretty spare. It's usually plot and dialogue. It's like I have like blank room syndrome. Like
Same, big time. Yeah.
There's no telling like where it is or what kind of room it is or anything like that. But because I knew that I had to turn that in so quickly, what I would do is I would go and edit what I'd written the previous day and add all that stuff in that I would normally do just in my first round of revisions. But when I have more time, I do edit small things as I go along. But also my first drafts come out pretty clean. Like I don't end up usually doing very large revisions in general. But the book I'm writing right now, I'm thinking it's set in Texas right now. I'm thinking about switching it to Florida. And if I did that, I would just keep writing the book from where I am about 20,000 words in and then go back and change the beginning.
See, that's the point where I would go back and change it. I would. I can't believe you took on a book that had to be turned into 5 weeks. I would never accept that. I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I don't think I could. I mean, I know what I need, you know, 5 months. Yeah. You know, I could write a book in 9 weeks. I'll draft it in 9 weeks. But again, so I don't change any of that stuff. I fill in the spare room, the white room stuff. I do all that in my first draft. Then I write the second draft without anybody's help. And I fix most of that.
Yeah.
So my second draft, you know, so you'd call the first draft a zero draft if you want, but my second draft is where I make that clean thing. And then I usually know the problems with it before I send it to my readers. And I'm just looking for them to help me solve them.
Awesome. I was actually surprised. So a small number said they don't make any changes at all, because I feel like you get that advice all the time. It's like,
you do. It's such a small number. I expected half the people to say that.
Yeah, me too.
Because that's the advice. I mean, that's, I don't know. I hear that all the time. It's one of those pieces of advice I always say is wrong. Like, you know, when you get, because, you know, every 3 months you get that question on Twitter, what's one piece of writing advice that you think is just ridiculous? Well, that's ridiculous. Never edit. Do what's right for you. I mean,
yeah.
The more you do it, the more you figure it out.
I always try to tell people, like, if a process works for you, then it's the correct process.
Yep.
And I've definitely heard writers, you know, lay out their process and basically be like, if you don't do this, you're an idiot and you're never going to be successful. And
yeah, I don't get that.
I hate it. Yeah. And you know, Lucianne Diver.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she lives near me. And so we're often on writing panels together, like local stuff.
She's the agent to the greatest science fiction writer in our generation.
Yes, she is. But I love being on panels with her because everything we do is completely opposite from each other.
That's cool.
Like everything. And so I love it because it's like a real, like, just right there demonstration of like whatever works for you works for you. And you know, yeah,
that's it. I mean, I'll tell you what I do, you know, I'll tell you how I structure a book.
Yeah.
Hoping mm-hmm. that if maybe something that I do will be something you can use, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
But if it's not, you know, then it's not.
Yeah.
I know people who do like entire spreadsheets to lay out their book. You know, they do scene maps for every scene. I do too, but I do them in my head. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, you need to know. You don't have a scene. If your character doesn't change from the beginning of the scene to the end of a scene, it's not a scene. That's as close to universal writing advice as I can give you. Your main character must change in a scene. I don't think that's controversial. Someone would probably say that's not right, but they're wrong. Your character has to change. Okay. I was a literature teacher. Trust me. That has to happen. But how it happens and you know, where it mm-hmm. happens and all that's different.
Yeah.
But you know what your 11th grade English teacher taught you, that, you know, the protagonist has to change throughout the book. That's all true.
All right. You just give me flashbacks. I guess So I switched schools at the very end of my sophomore year. And the teacher that I had at the new school was like the English teacher, I should say. I don't think she really cared about the content. Like, she cared more about format than anything else. Like, you literally got, yeah, like whole grades off if your paper is formatted wrong, you know? We were doing at the new school, Julius Caesar. And I had literally just done it like 3 months before at my other school. So it was like, I just coasted through that one.
That's great. I taught. So for 3 years after I got out of the Army, I taught American literature to 11th graders.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do some of the structure stuff, you know, because if you don't, I taught all boys too, which is great.
Oh.
Don't recommend that. But if you don't, like, they'll turn in a page, you know, they'll turn in a paper in like Wingdings font or something.
Yeah.
They'll just do something ridiculous if you don't take off some points.
Yeah.
But we spent, you know, more time on ideas than.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was great.
Yeah. I really enjoyed having you. So, the websites and social media info for both Dan and Mike are in the description, so you can go check them out on social media. They're both fun to follow, so I recommend it. And we'll say goodbye to Mike, and I'll just close out with a couple announcements.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye. All right. Thank you so much for watching. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like and subscribe right down there so you don't miss another episode. Also, tell your friends, because that is how they find out about stuff like this. You can subscribe via email by the link in the description, and you can also find the Patreon down below. Thank you so much to my Patreon supporters. You'll see their names on the screen at the end, but I just want to say thank them, because like sometimes when I feel like this the show is like a lot of work and I don't want to keep doing, like, just seeing their support really keeps me going. So thank y'all for that. The social media, like I said, for Dan and Mike is in the description, so go check them out. Upcoming, we have Wednesday Write-In every Wednesday on this channel at 8 p.m. with Beth Karnan, and that's going to continue until my schedule makes it impossible. So at least probably through December, if not longer. And the next episode of Pub Talk Live, it has not been announced yet, so this is another exclusive, on November 28th, is going to be with Margaret Owen and Rachel Stroll. So make sure you come back in 2 weeks for that. Thank you so much for watching. Everyone, stay safe, wash your hands, and I'll see you next time.